the low near 37.
If it's a book that you have read, the chances are better than even that Nancy Pearl has read that book. She's the world's most famous librarian, even though she's no longer a librarian. You hear her on KUOW's Weekday with Steve Scheer, and you've heard her on NPR's Morning Edition. You've read her books about what books to read. You've played with her action doll. You may even have heard the bluegrass tribute band called the Nancy Pearls. But what's Nancy Pearl's story? She's been gracious enough to come by to talk to us about that. Thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Russ. But I have to offer a small correction to the promo that you did.
Yes.
I only won a silver medal in the skeet shooting.
Okay.
You gave me far too much credit.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes. Right.
Where'd you grow up, Nancy?
Oh, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan.
And were you in a reading family?
I was in a family. I was in a reading family. My father actually got his GED because he had was an orphan and joined the Army when he was 14. His older brother lied and said they were both over 18. And so it wasn't until he was in his 70s that he went back to get his GED. And he was very proud of that. But he was a reader, and my mother was certainly a reader.
So did they encourage you to read, or did you come to it on your own?
Oh, I think I have no memory of my mother reading to me, but my sister assures me that she did. But mostly the people who kind of encouraged me about reading the most were the librarians at my local public library, and it was because of them. Really, totally because of them that I wanted to be a librarian.
Did you get the first book you read from the library, or was it something around the home?
Well, we didn't have any. We were very poor, and so we did not have books. We did, children's books especially. I mean, I think the first children's book I owned, well, I'm sure nobody ever has read this, but it was a book called Sand Dune Pony, because I was one of those girls who just loved horses, even in the middle of Detroit.
If you read Sand Dune Pony, call us immediately.
Yes,
206-543-5869.
Right.
That's 206-543-KUOW. Or if you've got a question for Nancy Pearl, Sand Dune Pony.
Yes. Yes. And then another one I remember owning was Marguerite Henry's Misty of Shinko Teague. And actually got that autographed by her at a book fair in Detroit.
That must have been
when
thrilling.
When I was a kid, it was fabulous.
Well, how did you happen to get into the Detroit library to meet these two librarians?
My mother took us to the library. That I'm sure she did. And after that, I just kind of spent my whole childhood and most of my adolescence at the library. And you had to be like 13 years old or in the ninth grade to get a youth card, which had a green strip across the top. And when I was 13, I said to Miss Whitehead, who was my favorite, really the person who just formed my life in a way. And I said to Miss Whitehead, I'm 13. Can I please go get a grown-up book? And very reluctantly, and I've only realized fairly recently that the reluctance that she showed when I asked her that was not because she was concerned about what I would read. She wasn't that kind of a librarian. She was just concerned that if I went over to that space on the other side of the circulation desk, mm-hmm. that I would never come back to the children's room. And she knew, and she was right, that there were still so many wonderful books I hadn't read.
What made her such a great librarian?
She really cared about the people that she helped. She really this was much more common, I think. I mean, she had a mission to make us better readers in the sense of, she's the one who introduced me to J.R.R. Tolkien and Mary Poppins and Johnny Tremaine. I mean, she knew those great Newbery Award-winning books and those Carnegie Award in England books. So,
did she live long enough to see little Nancy Pearl grow up to become the nation's most prominent librarian?
No. She lived long enough to see me become a librarian, and I worked actually at the Detroit Public Library after I got my library degree.
Now, I understand you almost went to MIT to study with Noam Chomsky.
Almost. I mean, the only time that I ever swerved from my – I mean, I knew when I was 10, Russ, that I wanted to be a children's librarian. And I made that decision partially because I was one of those – because I came from a very left-wing family who was very interested in making the world a better place. And that value was kind of inculcated in me. So I thought, what could I do to make the world a better place? And I felt – that I could do no better good in the world than do for other children what Miss Whitehead did for me. So that was why. But when I was in college, I took a course at the University of Michigan in transformational grammar, and it nearly transformed my life. I mean, the theory of transformational grammar and Noam Chomsky's theories about grammar and the innateness of it and all of those things were just so interesting to me that for a little while I actually thought about applying to graduate school at MIT, but I'm not that kind. I don't have that kind of mind.
They got my brother, Carl. Yes, he did. He became a linguist because of Noam Chomsky.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I'd love to talk to him about that.
But I'm imagining the 10-year-old aspiring librarian, Nancy Pearl. So were you already kind of talking to other kids and kind of suggesting books to them at 10?
Well, I think I'm sure I did that. I mean, Miss Whitehead had book quizzes every year, every summer. So, and the winners would get to choose what book she would buy a book for each one of the winners in the different age groups, which was so generous of her because it came out of her money. But I mean, that's how I started collecting these books, like the Mary Poppins that I have and the Johnny Tremaine that I have all came. And you could look in them and it says, Nancy Pearl, runner up, you know. Who beat me? That's what I want to know.
Nancy Pearl is my guest. We're talking about her life in books and otherwise. We're at 206-543-5869. You aspired to be a librarian since you were 10. Sometimes we get to the place we think we want to be. Was it as great as you thought it was going to be?
Well, being a children's librarian in Detroit, and I worked both in branches and on the bookmobile. So we went out to underserved areas. And one of the places that we went out to was the Brewster Douglas Housing Project, which is one of the poorest of the poor housing projects. And that's where Diana Ross grew up.
Oh, really?
In Brewster Douglas. And I mean, I can see where she began and where she ended. I have nothing but admiration for her for doing that. It was pretty amazing. So there was just a sense of, you know, I've always loved talking about books and I've always been enthusiastic about what I liked and sharing it.
When you went to an impoverished place like that, that maybe you had parents who were into books, what was the surefire book that you could bring out? Or how did you sort of try to get kids who weren't into books into books?
Oh, yeah. Good question. What kids liked then and still like, especially those middle grade readers, is they want books with a lot of action. I mean, they want something happening on every page. So today, a children's librarian might give an 11 or 12-year-old the Alex Rider novels by Anthony Horowitz, which are just like something happens all the time. I mean, the first of those, Stormbreaker, begins with a line, when the doorbell rings at 3 a.m., it's never good news. Mm-hmm. Well, you know you're going to be plunged into adventure after that. So some of the equivalents back then, although I think that the demands for the action were perhaps not as constant as they are now, but The Wonderful Flight to the Mushroom Planet by Eleanor Cameron. Did you happen to read that?
I did not happen to read that.
Oh.
But a good recommendation for a young person who might not be immediately into reading.
And still in print today, or still available. I believe it's still in print today. Just a wonderful, fun book. My Father's Dragon was the first book that my elementary school librarian gave to me. And I can still see where she walked on to the shelves, where in the room she was.
Well, the library was a magic place for me. The Berkshire Anthoneum in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And what my early enthusiasm was I found they had two whole shelves of magic books. And that was the place where I really wanted to be.
Yeah.
But your career in radio didn't start in Seattle, did it?
No, it started. You know this better than I do, Ross. Almost as well. It started in Tulsa and with KWGS, the NPR affiliate in Tulsa. And first I started at being a guest on on the Newsday show, very much like Steve's, like the morning show was here. And when I got to Tulsa, they had just at that moment stopped doing music. You know, it used to be classical music, and they had gone to an all-talk format. So they were kind of looking for something to fill those hours. Right. And so I did a show for them weekly on books and reading. And even now, all these years later, I still talk to them quarterly about good books to read. And I loved doing the radio.
Well, I was going to say, was it always easier for you to talk on the radio, which is difficult for some people?
It is. Yeah. And live radio, what I'm not good at with radio is having to write a book review and read it. It's just much easier for me to be spontaneous and speak from the heart.
Sure. Well, you first got on my radar back around then. I was the program director, and I got a mail from someone at Tulsa who strongly suggested that I put you on the radio in Seattle, that I give you a show. I didn't do that.
No.
But I did get you on the radio.
I did,
in fact, accomplish that, and it was a pretty exciting time. You came here without your husband. I did not realize this. You were here for 4 years before he got to move out. He had to finish his job there before he came.
Right.
That must have been hard.
Well, it was really interesting.
Yeah.
It was a very brave thing that I did. And my daughters, who are much stronger feminists than I am, were very proud of me for doing that. And the first year, I think I was in a daze, just like, I mean, I just didn't quite understand what was happening.
Emerald City and all.
Yeah, well, just sort of, why? What am I doing here? I mean, how did I leave this very good job at the Tulsa City County Library to come here? And it happened that my younger daughter had dropped out of the University of Chicago and had moved here to do theater and hang out. And one night I remember she called and she said, you know, oh, how are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm doing fine. I'm just sitting watching the sky turn black. she said, I'll be right over. So it was a really interesting experience to have that. And we had been married quite a long time by that time. And so, I mean, what we found is that we probably talked more during those 4 years.
That's so interesting.
than we did before since.
And one of my favorite experiences actually in my whole career was working with you when I was the program director, and this program that you started, which is everywhere now, you and Chris Higashi, What If Seattle Read the Same Book?
Right.
How did that begin? I mean, that's everywhere now.
It is.
Washington has it. A lot of cities have adopted it. Did that spring forth from your admission?
Well, we had gotten a grant from the Lila Wallace, what was then the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. And they're very smart with their grants, and they give their grantees a year of planning, which is included in the grant money. So Chris and I were able to hire a consultant, and we explained to her that what we really wanted was something that that really touched on things that we felt strongly about, the existence and the importance of book clubs for building community among diverse people, that we wanted people to become, through this program, familiar with books they might not ordinarily read. And there was a third thing, but those were the two most important things. And one day the consultant came in for one of our meetings, and we had told her all this, and she had gone off to kind of write it up and everything. And she came back, and the paper that she handed out to us said, What If All Seattle Read the Same Book? I mean, she came up with that title.
Wow.
And when we did it, I mean, it was wonderful. Russell Banks was here.
Right. It was The Sweet Hereafter.
It was The Sweet Hereafter, and it was just amazing to have him here and to talk with him about that book. And then, it got a little bit of national publicity, but did get a lot of national publicity. This was a library program that we were very, very proud of. And then Chicago Public Library decided to do it.
And that's when it blew up. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but our little piece of that is we did a radio dramatization of The Sweet Hereafter.
Yes.
And Anna Faris, who was just hosting Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago, now kind of the well-known star who came out of Seattle. She played the role of the girl.
I didn't remember who the girl was.
That's who it was.
It was Anna Faris. And her father was on the Library Foundation board for a number of years. Oh, that's so great.
That was really a great experience working on that. It's been really terrific seeing it go all over the place. Nancy Pearl is my guest. She's promulgated the Rule of 50, which says if you still don't like a book after slogging through the first 50 pages, set it aside. If you're more than 50 years old, subtract your age from 100 and grant it only that many pages. Nancy, really, don't some books not give up their treasures until page 75 or 100?
Yes, that is undoubtedly the case. But if you follow this rule, what you have to realize is that there's nothing to stop you going back to that book at any other time in your life, 2 days later, a week later. Much of the time that we don't like a book, I think we don't like it because of our mood.
Yeah.
We're just not in the mood for that sort of book.
So give it a break.
Give it a break.
At least.
And then go back. I mean, it took me 3 times to finally get into A Game of Thrones by George R. R. Martin. 3 times over two and a half years.
Well, something kept drawing you back to try it, so there must have been some little hook there.
Well, it was everybody who had said to me, you know, why didn't you include this book in Book Lust?
When Archie McPhee came out with a Nancy Pearl librarian action figure, you're holding a stack of books, you've got a finger to your lips going, push to shush.
Right.
And you've said that this shushing feature on the action figure would determine which librarians have a sense of humor.
Yes.
Well, now after many years of research... What does it show? Do most librarians get a kick out of that?
Yes. I think it's fair to say that most librarians enjoy it and get the fact that it plays with the librarian stereotype.
Yeah.
I think there were probably, at its height of popularity, there were probably 30 librarians around the world who just felt it wasn't appropriate. And
what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do?
And now, though, I have to say, I have been discontinued.
Oh, no.
Yes.
So now they're collectible.
So now they're...
I hope you've got a couple cases in the basement.
No.
You're set. No.
I have none. Or I have one box.
No more Nancy Pearl. Collect those.
Right.
You know, we're just about out of time, but I got to ask you about your current project. You're working with Amazon to bring out-of-print books back out there. And the question is, why is anything out of print anymore? I mean, everything's digitized these days. How did that happen?
Well, books just fall out of favor.
Yeah.
A lot of books aren't digitized. I mean, if these books had been digitized so people could get them, that would have solved all my problems in a way. But they're not available. And while it's true that a lot of authors, after a book goes out of print, after a publisher declares it out of print, are digitizing it themselves and putting it up.
A lot aren't. Yeah.
But many, many aren't. And the first book that's going to be published in April 3rd, I think, is A Gay and Melancholy Sound by Merle Miller, which is probably my all-time favorite book.
And once it does get reprinted, will it be digitized? Will it be around?
Oh, yes, it'll be. Yes.
That's fantastic. Nancy Pearl, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Ross.
I really appreciate you taking the time. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.